Hello, hello. Welcome to the End Evil podcast. Evil is the destruction of freedom. I love that quote from the book, The End of All Evil. If you don't have your own personal copy of the book, The End of All Evil, check out endevil.life and click on the little tab in the corner to go to the store. And you could also check out my book, the book that changed my life. And I'll send that to you and sign that copy and send you some evil stickers. And I'm very excited to share with you an episode I have today with two amazing women on the goddess level, I would say. We have today with us the wonderful Leslie Powers and Maria West, someone I'm super excited to talk to because I've been looking forward to this interview for a long time. I don't know why it took so long to happen, but we finally... divine timing came together, and we have Maria West with us. Thank you for joining us, Maria.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with the both of you.
Yeah, I'm glad I could pop in on this one. I told Chris, I want to be a part of that. So here I am.
Yeah, we're lucky to have Derek Bartolacelli in our life coming through every year or two to pop Indeed. In and visit us. And he's kind of been a connector too. And he always goes out and visits Maria, and they have a special relationship, a friendship for a long time. And he always speaks so highly of you. And so it just kind of like opened the conduit, you know, for us to get in communication. And then you reached out to me when I needed some help earlier this year, and that was pretty awesome. And I really appreciate that. And so, yeah, we've been checking out your work, Maria, and you've been doing this work for so long, what I like to call the great work. And Leslie screen's mirrored, but that what she was showing is Maria's book, which I'm going to share the link with in the chat when we're watching this. But I'll let Maria talk about her book in a minute. But check out her website, lovetruthandbeauty.com, and that has all your links. Is that correct, Maria?
It's correct. That is correct. And I really appreciate this opportunity, you know, because Derek is a love bug, and I was really sorry to see him go last week. I literally cried for an hour afterwards because the rarity of someone like him, who is just so kind and it's such a great masculine force, who has the ability to hold the feminine. I mean, I just am like, yeah. I miss him dearly, and he is a great connector, you know. And I know that he goes and visits you guys. He sends me photos and little videos and things, and just so sweet.
Yeah, he was with us for a few days, and we missed him when he left too. And my dog Sam deeply misses him.
Yeah, and our yard sure looked the better for his visit. He also helped us out getting a bunch of yard clean up and work
done. He's great that way. Yeah. He's really great that way. I mean, just offering to, do you need any help? Do you need me to, you know, haul something, whatever? And just.
And a great cook. Cooked us a wonderful
Yes, meal. He is. We made pizza. We made pizza at my Christopher's house, and it was delicious. It was so, so good. And to just watch him, you know, and he's focused. He cleans up after each step. So, you know, the kitchen is never a mess. It's just, it's good. I should be more like that.
Yeah. So, well, thanks, Derek, for being a good inspiration and connector. But I want to talk more about Maria. And I'm really happy to have Leslie with us talk about two really beautiful, amazing women in the same place. I'm getting hit with the fire of beauty here. But your website, Love, Truth, and Beauty, it's very interesting to me. You know, it's not like a topic I normally bring up on the End Evil podcast, beauty. But it's like it's an important part of life, and it's something that you put emphasis on. So I'd really love in this episode to explore that a little bit. But I'm going to go open my door and bring a little more light in. Did you want to say anything else, Leslie, before I have Maria talk about her website? lovetruthandbeauty.com?
No, but I think that's a really good opening question. You know, your website is named Love, Truth, and Beauty. And so we have the concept of love and beauty kind of sandwiching the truth. And I wonder how intentional that was and what is the significance of those three words and the importance to you.
Yeah, it was very intentional. The majority of my private practice, which I'm going into literally my 39th year next year. So almost 40 years of doing this work of handholding survivors of trafficking, handholding survivors of folks who were kidnapped as children or sold by their parents into sex slavery in parts of the world where, you know, the West doesn't really have an influence, and also parts of the world where the West is best, so to speak. So I have been immersed in the sort of dark aspects of feigned love, feigned truth, and feigned beauty. So a lot of my survivors survived by weaponizing their beauty. And so I had this real epiphany one day. I think I was in my mid-30s where I realized, whoa, there's some really crazy stuff here, because my discovery in my travels throughout the world, where I would visit the remnants of a rape camp or the headquarters of some kind of prostitution ring, revealed to me that the people who were actually heading this were not men, they were women. And these women were, in my opinion, overrun by their own toxic masculinity and the inversion of their femininity. Rather than being the bringer of life, they were actually the destroyers of life by lowering their frequency such that they would sell their own children, abuse children, abuse women, abuse boys, just abuse humanity in collaboration with the shitstems, whether they were governments or military or local, all the religious camps. Everyone is involved that is supposed to be good and whole and protectors of humanity. And it was a rude awakening. It was really rude. I didn't want to believe any of this stuff. I was thinking, maybe I'm delusional. Maybe, you know, I started looking into my own self-hate. I started looking into my own upbringing. I was brought up by a woman who is a psychopath, a man-hater, a very beautiful woman physically and very intelligent. She's got a doctorate and all that kind of stuff. She checked all the boxes, but yet I watched her weaponize her own beauty and her sexuality by being the sort of seductive mommy, you know. So my mom was known as, well, she's the hot mama, you know, because she wears these very low necklines on her clothing and bends over and the girls are there. And my male classmates are like this, you know, I mean, they're just mesmerized by it. So I grew up witnessing the sort of weaponizing of the feminine and her feminine wiles. And it made me very curious, because I, looking different from where I was growing up, was always curious about, what's going on here? Where there was a sort of sense of not belonging and also a sense of wanting to be part of this girls' club, and seeing the sort of inherent competition that began. I just remember 8 or 9 years old, you know, the little girls and sort of mimicking the sort of movie stars or the pop stars that were of that time, the 60s with the Mod Squad and Twiggy and all that kind of stuff. So I grew up with that. And so fast forwarding to my mid-30s and just witnessing this sort of weaponization of the feminine and this attitude of, and it was clear to me that, okay, this is the backlash. This is a backlash, a pushback onto the patriarchy. But at the same time, I was very confused because I really honor women and the power that women have to bring forth life. So as I was growing up and the whole feminism thing and getting recruited by the first wave feminism and the second wave and sort of being forced, like having things forced down my throat that I was oppressed, that I was this, I was that, and because I'm an immigrant and dark skin and a minority that, oh, poor me, I never experienced those things, to be quite honest. And I think a lot of that is just kind of like, I have a lot of war-torn heritage in my DNA from communism, Russian communism, Chinese communism, and also the Spanish Filipino. So I've got the conquistador class, and I've also got the classes of people who were colonialized. So being part, Mongolian and Chinese, that imperialization, and also the Philippines being imperialized first by the Muslims. The Muslims were there. Islam was there before the Spaniards showed up. They were there 300 years before. Nobody talks about that. And then, of course, the Westernization, the colonization, the Christianity that took over after that. So all of that's kind of come into play. So I was always skeptical. I would witness things and I'm going, well, that is shitty. What is happening here? And I was naive, and people say I was ballsy. And I said, I think I was just naive. I didn't think there were any repercussions. And then there was some pushback, where I've been attacked, I've been arrested, I've been, threatened that I need to just kind of zip it and mind my own business. And I started connecting the dots and realizing that the weaponization of sexuality and beauty is actually part of the inherent plan to create the war of the sexes, to create the war between women, sisters against sisters, usually in competition over the proverbial man, or in competition with ways to get over, because the shitstems all across the world are set up to exploit women, to exploit children, to exploit humanity in general. I don't think this is a man-woman thing. I think this is a humanity thing. So the website, I know I've been kind of rambling around, but the website, I really wanted to address these aspects. Love, the heart being the first eye. Truth, above everything else, as the umbrella. And beauty, because we all have that beautiful life force that is spirit. It's soul. It's spirit. I call it divine in the flesh. And we need to turn that around and really be able to express ourselves in ways that support love, that support truth. Not to weaponize beauty so that we distort the truth and that we distort love, because that's what ends up happening. That when we weaponize beauty, I've heard women say it again, well, in order for me to be loved, I have to be perfect. In order for me to be loved, I can't tell the truth. I need to shut up. I can't say what's just really in my heart
and express who you naturally are through the nature of who you are. Culture sets us up in so many ways because of the evil paradigm we're in, because of all these negative influences it's turned beauty into something that the modern culture looks at beauty, and it's something that becomes kind of sick, because like, I remember being a young man and, you know, the whole battle of, I remember the time when me and some younger kids found like a porn magazine behind the library, and it was like this big deal, you know, and it's like things like this that setting in motion this whole conflict ahead of time, you know, like going to school and trying to get a girlfriend or whatever. It was like a big setup for failure in a lot of ways, instead of a natural process that actually sustains humanity. And it's a really beautiful thing. And so everything that we would think of as beauty, the way we grew up, our culture has objectified and put it into a materialism style way. And it really reminds me of something that Leslie talks about. I'd like you to comment real quick, Leslie, on this, and then we'll give the mic back to Mario. But like actually realizing just how evil the world is, and how you mentioned that. Maybe you can comment on that a little bit, Leslie.
You mentioned that there was a point where you stumbled into things out of some naivete, right? And I think that I relate to that a lot. And I think my whole field actually is living in a certain bubble of naivete when it comes to the nature of the world and the people in it, and really minimizing and denying the true agenda of evil and the existence of evil. And it brings me back, and that was an awakening for me. It was really like one of the final pieces after I started listening to Mark Passio. It was like really recognizing, admitting that there is an agenda, there is evil. You can't just say, you know, everybody's doing their best, and you know, it's just a big ego. You know, there's something very malicious going on. And you know, you were going back into history and talking about all these wars and the ways that it's divided women from each other. It's divided women from men, that there are this diminishment of the value, the natural beauty of life and of women, of the feminine. And I'm wondering if you could comment on how trauma-based mind control has really affected all of us through the events of history, and how you see that having unfolded to get us where we are today.
That is a really, really great question. And, you know, to all of your points that you've made, our history, the collective pain body of humanity is based on war. It's based on violence, not just upon the planet, but upon each other, where this constant warring, and then the sort of karmic wheel, the reincarnation cycle. People think I'm nuts because I'm really a proponent of, this is my last life. I'm not signing up to come back here and perpetuate, because so much has been hijacked, not just our history, but spirituality has been hijacked, not just divided into all the religious mumbo jumbo, but also utilizing and inverting spirituality to make it sound like, you know, oh yeah, it's a carnival. I fucked up in all these lifetimes. I was violent. I'm just going to come back and make good. No, because when you start really diving in, and I remember diving in, I was a teenager. I had read The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and I was horrified. I was like, this is not going to end. And I got into this whole kick about looking at world history, looked at Egypt, looked, you know, and I learned English in a Catholic school and had to read all these things. And I'm going, it's just nothing but violence and destruction, rape and torture. And this is in the middle of Vietnam. And, both sides of my family were involved in World War I, World War II. And I just realized, this is it. This is the unending cycle. And we're trying to make it right. We're trying to have these peace movements and all this kind of things. But then nobody is doing the work, because I had to check myself. I started being more aware of the hate that was arising as I was reading this material. It was triggering something very deep in me. And I'm like, holy shit. What if this is like a simulation? And I remember because I learned a lot of English from American TV shows like The Outer Limits. You know, all those kind of weirdo sci-fi kind of things. And I was into sci-fi. I was thinking, we are in a loop here. We're in a loop. We're just getting more technically sophisticated. And now when you fast forward to where we are now, the uploading, if you will, of consciousness onto a fucking cloud. I mean, you can't make it up. It's been written in so many sci-fi novels over the last, 80 years. This is nothing new. And then exploring the sort of history of Atlantis and Lemuria and going beyond that, our galactic history, and you bring in the likes of Marduk and the whole cast of characters and how it is still being played out in the divide and conquer, us versus them. It's no different. And so the history, and I think this is why history is like being hijacked and the narratives are controlled, because people are just way too dumb to think critically and to not fall for the convenience of having it wrapped up and tied up in a nice bow and presented. Here's the truth. Bullshit. Absolute bullshit.
Yes.
And then when you're getting locked into, I'm just going to bring this up because this came up in a podcast last week, the whole search for confirmation of your DNA. Then you start getting into these sort of historical narratives of your own tribal lineage. And blood is important because this is what the powers that want to be are endeavoring to harvest. They're endeavoring to control it. And that's part of the mind control, is that, oh, you're part of this, you're part of that. And so it starts really showing the hierarchical nature. I can't believe I said that. In just how the powers that want to be have sort of laid out planet Earth and laid out the world and laid out the sort of, I mean, we're food. We are food for them. And the more we incarnate, as far as I'm concerned, they need us to incarnate over and over again because they need our life force energy. They live through us. They cannot leave this prison situation, but we can. We can escape because there are holes. There are chinks in their armor. And part of those chinks is to be able for each and every one of us to own our focused attention. I call it attention management and mastery. And of course, with the advent of social media and all the things, people are scrolling. I am barely on Facebook these days. I use a third-party app. I check my messages. That is about it. But I will not do it. I won't
like
do it.
Spiritual self-defense at this point. You know, I like Indeed. That term. I love puns. You said shitstems. I love that.
Yeah.
It's like a shit storm of shitstems.
Indeed.
It is kind of all the same shit another day. You know, in a lot of ways, because this battle for morality is ultimately what reality is all about, which is one thing I try to remind people, like, that's actually what reality is a surface for us to, it's a context for us to experience morality and the outcome of our actions in the real world. And talking back and looking back at what's happened before and seeing these rhythms and these, we come to realize that it really is our own personal self journey of self work to hopefully, like, kind of what you're describing to me makes sense, almost like the Egyptians describe it if you actually do all the 40, I forgot it was 41 or 42 laws of Maat, where if you actually do all this, you can actually go into this other place where you get out of the cycle and you go down into the garden of beauty or whatever you want to call it. And so, like, you know, I think the path for us all ultimately becomes, what do we do about this situation? It is a shit storm of shitstems, bullshitstems. And all their bullshit is repeating into infinity, echoing on and on. What do we do about it? Well, in the meantime, we try to balance ourselves in this mess. Mm-hmm. And like you pointed out, everything's been inverted. Beauty's been inverted. Love's been inverted. Truth, you know, we call, you know, being responsible, paying taxes, you know, by stealing from people. That's how we're responsible. What the WTF?
Stealing from ourselves.
So, I mean, what I was going to bring up next is, you know, you talk a lot about the feminine energy, the divine feminine energy. I get together with the One Great Work Warriors, and we've met with Leslie and some other ladies. I wish you would have been there for that one. But, you know, this balance of male and female and the divine male and the divine female versus the modern view of male and female, I think is a big part of this game in the exterior world. Indeed. And this inner self-work world that you're talking about. So I'd like you to comment on that.
Sure. So it's a little, I've been on podcasts with these sort of feminists and goddess entrepreneurial types. And what's fun is when I open my mouth and I come up with stuff that they don't want to hear. And part of what they don't want to hear, like one of the biggest problems is the insistence that the divine masculine is a man and the divine feminine is a woman. That is a big, huge, freaking problem, because what it creates is that it creates this mental illness and this mass hysteria around identification of being a man or a woman, regardless of your gender. And I just, it's just such a sore point within me. I'm actually banned in Canada. I cannot go to Canada because of, you know, just my attitudes about the many different pronouns and on and on and on like that. Okay. I just wouldn't sign off. I was supposed to speak and I just wouldn't do it. So I wasn't allowed to speak, but I did end up doing my presentation because one of the guests had a huge, huge penthouse on Queensquay about three blocks away from the event. So we managed to do it. But the point is that when we're talking about integration, we're talking about energies. We're not talking about gender. We're talking about the principles of the masculine and feminine. The masculine is the gifting giver, the defender of life. And the feminine is she is the receiver. She is also the sort of non-aggression principle that we all really need to, some of us need to develop it, and some of us need to dial that down and bring up our inner masculine to be able to defend the principles of natural law, especially when they are being threatened on a daily basis. And so when I speak about that, there is actually a union, if you will, within each and every one of us, regardless of whether we're a man or a woman, of that integration between our masculine and feminine. And it is a collaboration. We are joined, or we should be anyway. A lot of people are like denying their inner masculine authority. And the feminine is also denying her own authority as the receptive principle. We need that in order to have the balance of gifting and giving and receiving and to be able to create and defend life. We need to have both aspects of the masculine and feminine within. And this is not, you know, people talk about, well, it needs to be a 50-50. No, it doesn't. Life is not static. It is moving. It is in constant motion, even when it's still and not moving. That's called active stillness. That is a masculine principle of being able to hold steadfast and not be in motion, because it's a conscious pause where you're pausing to receive direction from spirit, from the divine, and not be in constant motion. And so there's so much confusion around the balancing of these energies. And when in fact, they are fluid energies, they are in collaboration with one another. And sometimes the masculine needs to be in the forefront. You know, when we're out in the world and doing stuff, we are in our masculine presence. When we're resting, we could be still be in our masculine presence, especially during meditation, because that is active stillness, or we could be in our feminine mode. Now, what gets confusing, and this is where a lot of women really almost shit themselves, because when I tell them that nurturing energy is actually a materialization of masculine energy, because you are doing something from your heart out to a source outside yourself, whether it's a cause, a business, or your children, okay? That is masculine energy. So the nurturing aspect of taking care of children is actually masculine. Caretaking people is actually masculine. And there's a confusion there. And no wonder women are pissed, because the feminine essence, the feminine, as in women, 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 the woman gender is constantly outside herself, giving, 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 in the masculine mode. And of course, she's going to be pissed off because she's out of balance. So the balance of the masculine and feminine, between men and women and between the eternal masculine and feminine, is an inside job, which brings us to the importance of shadow work. I repeat myself constantly. I sound like a broken record. You know, shadow work is the thing. And if you're not doing it, you're failing as a human being, as far as I'm concerned. You're just a useful idiot tool for the powers that want to be, because you don't even know where you're being pulled, where your attention is being hijacked, and you're being completely hijacked.
Yeah, I agree with you, Maria. I heard you say before about nurturing being a masculine energy, and I thought about that, and I really recognized it as true. Because as a mother, we are exerting all this energy outward to caregive for the child, the newborn, you know, and they are in the role more of the feminine, whether they're a boy or girl, right? They're in that receptive mode. And so when we have to turn on, and we're on all the time, you know, giving at work, giving, you know, at home, giving at children, you know, that is very much a masculinized imbalance. And so I think it is, it's like a part of the trickery, even perhaps, of saying that the feminine, to be feminine, you have to be taking care of someone or giving all the time, you know, and the women are depleted and guilty, feeling like they're not doing enough all the time, right? The ability for many women just really struggle with the ability to even stop and just be and receive. So it's a disservice.
I have a lot of compassion for the young women who are just so angry and view pregnancy as a malignancy, as a parasite. They view their unborn children as parasites and want to get rid of it. And so the whole abortion conversation, actually, it's not even a conversation. It's a rant. It's an outrageous rant and a hateful one at that. And I've been like in the middle of both factions. And it's very disturbing, because unless you do the shadow work and pull back all of those projections onto other, you're not going to get it. In fact, you just flat out, I mean, you talk about willful ignorance. There's one topic where, it, you know, this sort of this clash. But if you apply morality, it's pretty cut and dried to me. And of course, you know, many women would argue, my body, myself, you know, my choice. And it's like, okay. And there's this beautiful illustration of a woman, a pregnant woman, where it's being illustrated. There are two beings here, not just one. And who speaks for the unborn child? And, you know, then, of course, you look at any of the comments and it's just a fast of cells and just on and on and on. I mean, the immorality of it is just staggering to me.
Right. And I do think, you know, having compassion is good to recognize mm-hmm. all the forces of our history and that trauma, you know, of warring and the ways that really we've been disconnected from nature and the natural appreciation of the mm-hmm. feminine and of life and birth and mm-hmm. all of this has been so, like you said, weaponized, right? And so there is reason for anger and there is a real conundrum in our modern world because mm-hmm. the support for life and birth and child rearing is really absent, you know.
It all should be such a beautiful process, you know, is what I've come to realize. You know, I had a couple thoughts this morning, you know, kind of like pondering about beauty. And I was thinking, well, one, right off, for me, like one of my ways of connecting with God, the universe, the great all, the divine spirit, you know, has been through nature. And I think of what comes to mind is standing on top of a mountain, looking at the wonder of the beauty. Mm-hmm. I've been affected my whole life by mountains. And I don't know why. Trees and mountains just stir something, like you said, deep within me, mm-hmm. maybe from ancient lifetimes. I don't know. I get the heebie-jeebies almost just thinking about it. Runs up my spine. I feel these almost like orgasmic feelings sometimes just looking at a skyline, you know, and the beauty and the reality of the intricacy of nature points me towards, no, there's a great intelligence here. This is amazing. This is mind blowing. This is truly beautiful. And that can't be easily erased, but modern mm-hmm. culture with so much television, so much time on screens and digital worlds, I can see where modern kids and people might never even get those real connection experiences like I did going to church camp or whatever, when I got to go truly outdoors and when you turn the lights off and it's really dark, you know? So that was kind of one of the things that came to my mind right away about beauty in its natural sense is this amazing tool for me for connecting to the divine. But I'm curious to hear from Aria and Leslie as well. How can beauty help people in this path towards truth, natural law, freedom, coming to realize these things? How is it a tool for elevating ourselves? How can we change the dynamic, I guess?
Do you want to go, Leslie?
You're unmuted, sweetheart.
It's an interesting question to think about beauty as a means to elevate one's consciousness, right? I think. And I think that the experience of recognizing around us and is all around, we have to stop doing and making and seeking it, right? Which is active and very outward, right? Outside of ourselves in a sense, but also to sort of be receptive, to be present, and to see, you know, where the beauty is in nature and in life, and even in humanity, you know, where it's very easy to get very black-pilled and very cynical and very in the head and very you know, complaining and negative and focused on, but I always, I think where my hope, not just, yeah, hope, but also like motivation and my, spirit gets ignited, like you were describing, Chris, is in seeing the beauty around me. And I don't have to go buy makeup to find it. You know, I don't have to go like change my wardrobe. It's all around. And when I'm in that state of awe around the actual beauty, especially nature, right? You know, and when we look at outside nature, but I think also, you know, when you're looking at a child or a pet, or even I, like I'll sit in the morning sometimes. It's like part of my practice is just sitting in the quiet with my eyes open and just gazing around my space and just really appreciating like the colors and the shape and the lighting and the birds chirping, or the, you know, if there's something that just is beautiful. And it, to me, it brings me to the essence and the core of like this opportunity we have to be alive as living beings, you know, and interacting with it and getting to see it and feel it. So I don't know if that answers the question, but.
That's so beautiful. And I concur with all of that. I do the same thing. And, you know, our planet, not the world, the planet, the world is a projection of all the things, the buildings and things onto this globe, the planet, and its nature and its beauty, the flora and the fauna. For me and my environment, living in the high desert mountains, every day, no matter if the weather is shit or the weather is beautiful, warm, cold, you know, we've had snowstorms, I wake up and I witness, because I wake up early, I witness the sunrise, and I just am, my breath is just, it's breathtaking. And I live here. And then with the sunsets, I live here. And the hiking around, the critters, and just the feel of walking, hiking through and feeling the wind, there's a certain sensuality in just the senses of feeling the air against my skin and feeling that the temperature changes and the humidity. I live in a very arid area. However, it's its own ecosystem, because every now and again, I'll get this misty, moisty thing happening. And that in and of itself is just so, there's a deliciousness in like being there, being in the middle of it, and just being covered in this fog mist. And I'm from San Francisco, you know, I was there for 36 years, and I was lucky because my property was in the middle of this, of two main city blocks, but I had an oasis in the back that was, you know, protected from the street. So everywhere I've lived has been this real sanctuary where nature and beauty, plants, and just the critters that were attracted to cohabitating with me. I think, you know, beauty is all around us. And you're right, you don't have to wear makeup. It's not about clothes. It's not about this sort of fashion, whatever. We can appreciate it. I do. But it's not what drives me, you know, and then just the being in your own space, in your own skin, is such a lovely, beautiful, sensual experience. And, you know, we're so desensitized that, you know, our attention gets hijacked on this stupid scrolling thing. You know, and now I'm being notorious because I don't even plug in my phone. So invariably I'll look for my phone and, oh shit, the battery's dead. When was the last time I looked at it? You know, I don't know. So that sort of change, the shift that we have to make from this digital reality to the reality of nature and beauty, I think is super, super important. Yeah. And, you know, too many people just stay in front of their screens all day or in front of a TV or whatever. It's weird to me. It's just weird.
I think just to connect it to your comment about attention and where our attention is so vital, and the practice of mindfulness and mindful presence as a tool, right, to disconnect from the shitstorm, to disconnect from the matrix and all of that which is endeavoring to control us and feed off of us, right? There really is a need to really evaluate all of the thoughts and worldviews and views about yourself and about your body and about what you're supposed to be doing and what you're supposed to look like and all of that. And that's the shadow work, right?
Yeah. You gals actually brought something to light for me. In my own experience, like I can remember back in school, I felt like people were constantly telling me, either my parents or school teachers or whatever authoritarians were telling me in one form or another, you have a lot going for you. You have a lot of potential, but you're just not applying it. You're just not paying attention. And I heard that so many times as a child, paying attention. I used to even say, that shit's expensive, man. You know, like, why do I have to keep paying you guys, you know, my attention all the time? When do I get to put it where I want to put it? You know, and like, I grew up a lot in school, like looking negative on myself, like, on my big nose. You know, I was so worried about having a big nose, you know? And it wasn't until years later, I met this artist who, he saw me as soon as I walked in his door. He was a sculptor. And he's like, you have a beautiful nose. Oh, I want to sculpt your nose. Oh, yeah. You should be proud of that nose, you know? And it occurred to me this morning, like before our meeting, I was like, I wouldn't really think of myself as very beautiful. And then I even thought of making a joke of how I'm not very beautiful. And then I stopped and I was like, no, wait a second. I don't really think that anymore. I actually think I'm a very beautiful, amazing thing. What I am is awesome. And it's been occurring to me, especially getting to the age of 50 and being like, look how good I'm looking and how good I'm doing for my age. And I'm proud of my body. I'm proud of my mind. I'm proud of what I put out there in the world. You know, and everybody else should be too. You shouldn't be raised in the system that's teaching you to beat yourself down and be like, oh, I'm ugly. I got a big nose. Mm-hmm. I can't do things right. No, fuck that. Stand up and accept your beauty and realize the ways that you are beautiful, that nothing else is, and you're unique in that beauty. And that beauty needs to be expressed and shared the way that nature gave it to you to do just that.
Love it. Love it. Hear, hear. And that's part of the sort of mind control in the matrix, because the matrix tries to tell you who and what you are and what you need to do and what you need to say yes to and what you need to say no to, blah, 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 blah. And men and women will twist themselves into pretzels and all sorts of things in order to align themselves or conform with whatever, I can't even put it into words because it's so foreign to me. I won't. And there are just so many things that people fall into where their attention is like hijacked, that we're all flawed. We're flawed. And so we need to fix it. We need to be more like this person in the matrix. It's like, nah, I'm gonna pass. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, in, you know, my work, and I'm sure yours, you know, there's so many people who feel like they're failing and are not good enough, you know, are not lovable, or, you know, and so forth. And what's I find beautiful in, you know, one of the roles I have is facilitating groups. As I really get to see, you know, the process of people starting to feel special through the reflection of other people, right? And the presence, the ability to be in a group of people and start to reveal oneself, mm-hmm. right? And be accepted, and to see these connections made that inspire hope, you know, for people in life. you know, it's like, it is a deprogramming from all this self-talk, you know, received by their parents or the external world. And I think that is another thing that's truly beautiful, is just to see people grow, right, and become more internally sovereign and step forward into creative expression to feel mm-hmm. Maria are just like so truthful, you know, and the strength that you have to kind of say, you know, fuck this, you know, the system. I don't need your big event, you know, or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't need their endorsement.
Yes. Yes. That's one of the hardest lessons. I think that's one of the biggest programming, is this somehow need to get validation through an external system, whether, you know, mm-hmm. we're trained in the mainstream school system to stand in line and to get the grades and to go to college and to do this, make money, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's a very foreign thing when people dare to challenge that and step out of that. But that is, to me, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the gift of rejection. And I think that's really one of the gifts that I believe that my mother has bestowed upon me, that gift of rejection, because, you know, being unwanted, being, she made no bones about it. She did not like me. She, you know, just, I mean, we won't go into it, but that was a really, really harsh reality. And I thank God for my little fairy self, because I used to pretend, you know, and I've told the story a million times, that I was a magical fairy. And I also pretended that I was one of those mean, angry fairies, don't fuck with me kind of thing. And those two personas were really, I think, they were lifesavers for me to navigate that realm of being rejected by the mother. And, you know, my father wasn't in the picture. So having to internally work through the sort of emptiness and the, you know, the black hole that you find yourself in when you're witnessing this discrepancy, like nothing's lining up. But then the universe sent me birds and flowers and kitty cats and my favorite birch tree and the Goldbergs across the street, who would invite me to dinner because quite often I ate by myself. And being included in this family where these people actually like each other. They like each other. They talk to each other. They're asking me what's going on in my life and how I'm feeling. It's like, what? And I remember the first time being asked how I felt. No one had ever asked me that in my entire life. And I think I was like 5 or 6. So to be posed that question, I was a little alarmed. I didn't know what to say. You know, it's like, what's the right answer? You know, because by that time I was really programmed to that I could get approval with my intellect and playing the piano or playing music, you know, because those just came naturally. But to be able to answer that question, how I was feeling, what's happening for me, like, whoa, okay, let's have a nervous breakdown. Mm-hmm. But that was a real, that was a real opening. You know,
I think so many children experience that, something similar to that, of not really being asked mm-hmm. what they actually think and feel, and not being seen as having the intelligence that they actually have. And, you know, yes. I remember being a young child and I had some really spot on, very deep assessments of my environment that no one ever inquired about. I'd never shared. My parents had no idea the mm-hmm. depth of my thoughts, really. And I think that affected me later, really, when asked what I liked, what I wanted, what I felt. And it was a very foreign question for me, actually, and even not losing the ability to know what those things are mm-hmm. and were. And I think that is part of how this matrix kind of hijacks us from ourselves.
Indeed.
External focus.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've always liked that, that idea of waking up, because like the movie, The Matrix, you know, it was so intense in that movie when Neo sits up, you know, and he sees all the other people enslaved. And that's really how it felt for me, coming to certain recognitions and, you know, realizations about the world. But you guys really reminded me too of the term initiation. I've always liked that, taking the initiative. It's like, it's that extra step of thinking, you know, like when the infant realizes that the infant and the parent aren't the same person. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. I get to move my own hand. So that's kind of where, you know, like we're challenging listeners, you know, with End Evil Podcast, with the work you do at Love, Truth, and Beauty, with the work that Leslie does at AliveThrive.life, it's to challenge people to self-initiate, ask yourself the hard questions, and to give the honest answers, or listen for the honest answers mm-hmm. that come from deep within or from deep without, or, you know, in the shallows, wherever that shows up, we have to be ready, you know, to listen. And I think some of the things you've done are really amazing and incredible, Maria. I want to point people, we do the Freedom Under Natural Law Conference, several years running. Maria was a speaker in Funnel 3 and talk about wokeism. And so you could check out replays on the Freedom Under Natural Law Conference on that. I already pointed out your website, lovetruthandbeauty.com. And I'm going to share the link to your book. I think the author's page on Amazon is a good place. But maybe you could talk a little bit about your book, Effed Wide Open, The Rude Awakening of the Heart-Based New Humanity.
Well, that book is very, it's very autobiographical, and it's being actually rewritten. So I'm working on a third edition for the first book, and to tie in the second and the third book, which got put on hold in their publication when my old publisher dropped me just before COVID happened. So I had a very disturbing interaction with the publishing houses in Europa, in Europe, rather. And it just wasn't to my liking. So I got dropped. But the upshot of it is it really chronicles my process of the, not just the abuse, but the realization that my abusers can't help themselves. And the sort of rude awakening of realizing that, oh, wow, because, you know, the New Agers would say that, oh, everything is just like so love and light and everything's aligned and I just have everything happening for me. I've got perfect relationships. And, you know, I mean, that's what they're selling. They're trying to sell that. And then, of course, if you don't get that, you're a fuck up. It's your fault because you didn't buy this program or that program. And believe me, I did my share of, you know, hopping on all these bandwagons of this, that, and the other thing, whether it was channeling, whether it was whatever, you know. And I think back to it, and it's so laughable because the search for all the things to make it all line up. And then I kept going back to the thing that really changed my life when I was 12, which was reading the Kabbalion. I mean, I was floored. It's like, whoa, the universe is what? It's mental? And then the process of actually checking it out and playing with that. And realizing, holy moly, this works. And then discovering things that are in alignment with that. Neville Goddard's work on reality creation aligns with the Kabbalion. Not only that, reality transurfing by Vadim Zalin aligns with the Kabbalion. And it's just like, whoa! And just adhering to those things, it's like, why reinvent the wheel? And then of course, reading the Secret, which I actually end up throwing in the fireplace because, I mean, I'm like going, you clowns, stop it. Just stop. Stop, stop, stop. Just full on stop. I mean, it was just so fraudulent in so many ways. And then I know so many people that, you know, signed up for like Oprah's little thing, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm just not a fan of her. So I just don't fall for things easily, especially once you figure out that you are it. And that it's your mind and the way you think that is creating your universe. And that, you know, currently there's over 8 billion people concurrently creating their own universe, which way you don't know about them. They're creating their own thing. And so that was just such a freeing moment for me. So the inspiration to write the book actually came from a training I was doing in 2004 in Sofia, Bulgaria, where I was being hosted by two of my very, very best friends who were foreign exchange students when we were 15. And so they invited me, and there was a woman there. She was from Romania, and she really connected to a lot of the stories that we were sharing. And at the time, my grandmother had just passed away. And this is my Finnish, Russian, Mongolian, Chinese grandmother. And how she was the product of my great-grandmother, Petra, was gang raped by a Russian platoon at 13. And had my grandmother. So that event, that DNA, and finding that out, and then, you know, subsequently connecting all the dots and being in Russia and Central Asia and Mongolia, and also having been born in the Philippines to a Spanish mother, you know, it's like it all just sort of went, yeah. And I realized, because my mother then, while I was growing up, she finally gave me this insight, which ignited so much compassion for her. Because when she was a small child during World War II, the Japanese had occupied the Philippine Islands for several years. And my grandfather was a political person, and he apparently was on the hit list for assassination. So they hid underground, and my mom was what, 5, 6, 7. So I just, it opened my heart to realize that the secondary psychopathy, this sociopathy, this narcissism comes out of this pure victim consciousness and the annihilation of this innocence. And so part of the thing in the book is really talking about the awakening process of realizing where you've been, where you're at, and where you're headed, and that there are certain decisions that you have to make where you got to up-level. You have to up-level the way you think. The self-talk, the belief structures. You've got to look at all these traumas. You've got to do the shadow work. There's many ways to do shadow work. And it's not one size fits all. And I have exercises at the end of each chapter. But getting back on point, starting to write that book back in 2004 and the 10 years that it took to put out the first edition, I'm not the same person I was 2004. I'm not the same person I was in 2014 when it came out, which cost me my whole family, by the way. They did not like that I had put out this book. And my own mother, my last conversation with her was, fuck off and die. click. Never heard from her again. I have no ties to my mother or that side of the family, but I still have ties to my father's lineage. And that's a whole other conversation. But what's come out of that is the title itself, Effed Wide Open, The Rude Awakening of the Heart-Based New Humanity. What ended up happening after its first publication is that my entire life in the Bay Area, after 36 years of having it be my base, was burned to the ground. And every assertion I made about community and conscious community and Tantra and all that bullshit betrayed me. Everybody, all my colleagues that I thought were clear and dear, all threw me under the bus, betrayed me, had affairs with my partner that I'd been with for almost 10 years. I mean, just the whole shitstorm of like, what the fuck? And, you know, and that's the whole thing. And I remember talking to this healer about my book, because I was terrified to publish it, because I was being straight up honest about a lot of stuff. I didn't edit. I had to have legal teams come in and try to talk me down. Well, you might not want to say that. I didn't name names. I did not do that. So all the names I took out or changed them or whatever. But the person said, you know, when this book comes out, you're going to be living it out. So the whole premise of Effed Wide Open is, are you fucked over? Are you fucked wide open? It's your choice. And it's perspective in up-leveling the way you think. Because after it got published, I thought I'd been fucked over, honestly. And then with the follow-up of the second edition back in 2018, I had 3 years to sort of, you know, sort things out. And then there was another thing that happened. My assistant of 21 years passed away all of a sudden. And my beloved mentor, Pearl, who I worked with, she was a Jungian psychologist. She passed away, and it's like everything went to shit. And I had 100 dates for this book promotion that was supposed to go until the end of 2021. And then in 2019, I turned down a translation deal and I got dropped. I was completely fired. And then COVID happened. I lost all of my work visas. So you talk about, you put out this truth and it says, you really want the truth? Do you really want the truth? Well, let's just out your Bay Area community. Let's out your family. Let's out all of your friends. Let's out your partner. Let's out the book publishing. Let's out the truth and freedom movement. Like, people stopped talking to me. Literally, they were all afraid, like, oh shit, you know. And my YouTube channel was deplatformed after 9 years. I mean, 2015 was bad. It was really bad. And I got the hell out of California and moved and then moved to Europe. So it's like, holy moly, all the things. It's like, be prepared to have your life completely rattled. And so what's happening is I'm rewriting it and I'm outing myself once again. All the premises that I made, the conclusions that I made, well, some of them were correct and a lot of them were dead wrong. Just, I made a mistake. And I feel like I need to come clean. I owe people that look, you know, you don't need to say yes to everything. Not every door opportunity is yours to walk through. And not everybody in your circle of people, your colleagues, not everybody is a good person. And, you know, something that Mark Passio said to me, this is years ago, I think this had to be Free Your Mind back in 2016. You know, he talked a lot about the you know, so just sort of gatekeeping your energy, gatekeeping your resources, and how your naivete, that is, I'm the person that wants to see everybody as a good human being. What a big fat fucking lie that is. Because my belief in that turned my naivete and my openness into, you know, just being a tool for psychopaths and narcissists and sociopaths, NSPs, to come for me, basically. And those have been hard, hard lessons. And it really is about, you talk about the receptive principle of the feminine, just kind of going overboard, bring it to me. I'm just like an open vessel. It's like, girl, shut it. Stop.
Yeah.
Full stop.
And that's how your book changed your life, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such an interesting dynamic. And So it sounds like your lessons through the first two editions were leading to maybe an understanding of how do you create more gatekeeping, that you don't have to be so receptive
Indeed.
To all experiences.
Indeed.
Yeah. And how do you discern, you know, what are the keys to give people in that?
Oh, yeah. I have a whole checklist now of, you know, red flags, just the red flags that I willfully, I'll come clean, I willfully ignore them. No, they're not like that. Oh, yes, they are.
I relate as a woman in relationships where I completely overlooked my own intuition or the red flags and learned the hard way, right? And I think many people do. So I admire, you know, I think that it is important to speak out, you know, around like informing people to set boundaries in different ways, to learn how to discern. Because we keep stumbling into just more shit shows that we're willfully participating in. It's really distracting us all from, I think, the higher purpose. It's keeping us held back. You know? Mm-hmm.
Indeed. And it's a painful ride. You know, I don't claim, like, people, you've had an easy, you have no idea. I have fucked up so many times in my endeavors to be aligned with love. But, you know, there's a big difference, and especially in relationships, you learn about, you know, love is not a feeling. It is a spiritual practice of doing and being. And so that whole romantic notion of, oh, but it's like, yeah, no. And so with the Scotsman, with my Christopher, when I first met him, I didn't like him. I just didn't. You know, there was no, I wasn't sparked. I wasn't, you know, lusting or anything like that. And it's been over time that the love and the being and the doing has been developed. And of course, don't ignore the signs. You know, within the first 12 hours of me being back in America, I met him, and you know, and yeah, I had dinner with him and a mutual friend, and I didn't like him. I was just like, ick, no. But then, as time came on, and then COVID hit, you know, it's like we developed this very, very deep friendship that was really centered around our love of music and nature, cribbage, and just being able to cook and do those really very quiet and intimate things that don't require a lot of distraction, don't require a lot of money, because you know, I think there's a little bit of mind control around the sort of overspending and the sort of dating process of, you know, I mean, I listen to some of these videos and shorts on dating and these women, it's like, holy shit, man, if I were a dude, I would run. I would run for the hills. I mean, it's just frightening, this gimme, gimme, gimme kind of thing. And that's the thing, is that my feminine nature needed to drop the kibosh.
Yeah, so much of the societal pressures have to do with the movies, the television shows, the magazines that have indoctrinated people into expecting, you know, this sort of Disney style relationship, which really doesn't exist. You know, then reality hits and we have to suck it up and realize that true love is showing up when you said you were going to show up. True love is taking that extra step at the grocery store to get something that the person you love cares about or wants, asking the person what they need, you know, even when it makes you uncomfortable, you know, stepping out of your comfort zone to help somebody, even when you don't want to. All these things are like the true work, the true self work, and the true, you know, I love how you come out with all this honesty and expressing yourself. And saying, yeah, I made mistakes, because then other people watching or listening can realize, like, you know, Maria's not saying that she's the end all, you know, teacher of everything. She's just expressing her own experience and trying to learn as she teaches. And I think that is really the goal with natural law, coming to understand it, coming to teach others, is express what you're going through, express what we're trying to learn. And do that with other people so they have the ability to learn from your experience and not have to make the same mistakes you made. And I don't, that's what I do when I do my work. I ask myself, what did my 17-year-old self need, you know, that I didn't get? Well, I never heard anybody bring up a lot of these topics. You know, now there's a bunch of 17-year-old out there who might be able to listen to this conversation and go, you know what? Those people said that in that convo. And then that idea's in their head, and we're already training that thought process to ask those questions. So I'd like to end the last, you know, 10, 15 minutes here. Like, what piece of advice or truth would you share with, you know, your younger self or somebody on your path in a similar way that might help them make some of the mistakes you made? And perhaps we get time, Leslie, you can express with that idea too. Yeah, I'd love to hear what you guys have to say.
Well, I think the main advice is to really be true to yourself and to take stock. And, you know, it just goes back down to basics of your immediate environment. What are you eating? What are you drinking? What has grabbed your attention the most? What are the kinds of people that you're having relationships with? Are they friendlies? Are they toxic? What is your self-talk like? Is it friendly? Is it toxic? Because if it's toxic, to really start being honest and removing yourself from these toxic environments, and whether you have to make a change or eliminate things and not hang out with certain people, not be like, you know, if you need to be by water, be by water. Don't default to whatever is convenient because, oh, I can't do it. You know, and watch that self-talk of, I can't, it's too hard, or I'm too tired. That's another one thing that I hear, and I get it. I really get it, you know. But I think in order to cultivate awareness, you have to like really be aware of what is going on in your immediate vicinity and nip things in the bud that are not cool. You don't tolerate disrespect. You don't tolerate shitty food. You don't tolerate water that's dirty. You don't tolerate friends who put you down, or friends who use you, or partners that put you down, who aren't there, who are, you know, but I love him. Okay, that's great. But it's not about love. It really is about compatibility and alignment. You can love each other, but if you have different styles of processing things, and the way he processes or the way she processes is really abusive to you or neglects you, you've got to get out of it. And, you know, and these are just really, really hard observations of whatever it is that you are around, that you are putting yourself in, because at the end of any day, it's on you. You are the master of your reality. And so by that, by owning your attention, you can up-level your thoughts. And by up-leveling your thoughts from within, so without, your outer reality will start to shift, I promise. And it's an inside job. So, and I highly recommend journaling and your thoughts, and just really tracking where your mind goes. And, you know, all of a sudden, oh shit, snapping out of it and realizing, oh my God, I've been in that black pill realm. And that's easy to do. That's really easy to do. I mean, and it's a really, really awful thing to stay in that realm. And so I think it's important to have resources of inspiration, books that you can pick up again and again and again. I have multiple copies of The Kybalion everywhere because it's just the way I roll. I like it, you know, it's a reset. And I think that's important. And I think to that point, to get out and get out into nature, get some sunshine, get some moonlight, get some beauty, and be awed by the outer nature, by the outside, because it's there for you, and that's beauty, and it's free.
Yeah, I really resonate with what you're saying, and I think what I would add or kind of validate is that, you know, don't settle and try to tolerate a situation, a relationship, an environment that just doesn't fit for you. Don't try to, you know, don't allow fear to stop you from saying, no, this isn't me. This isn't for me. You know your value and cultivate that courage to step closer into what's a yes, and learn to discern the difference, right, as to what energetically is true and right and fits and resonates with you in terms of relationship or situations. And know that, you know, we all will find other souls that resonate with us, right? We don't have to stay in the mainstream, right? You know, your value, your uniqueness is something to be expressed and to value rather than to hide, you know, and don't, I would say too, like, don't over isolate, like, talk, express, you know, speak out the things that are, you're in dissonance about, right? Don't just stay in dissonance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Okay. Yeah, this is some great tips, folks. And, you know, there's so much more great words and philosophy and thoughts to be learned and studied. Like I said, check out lovetruthandbeauty.com. Maria has 190 episodes. And besides that, she has courses. Click around on her website and, you know, helping people like deprogram from mind control, for instance. You know, I don't know how severe, we have all been through various levels of mind control. So depending on where you're at, maybe you're going to seek Maria's help for that. And, but otherwise, you know, I hope you guys who are listening take these words and ideas to heart. And I really appreciate having you with us today, Maria. Really been looking forward to hanging out. And
thank you so much.
Do this again. But yeah, any last words or anything you want to cap it off with, feel free.
Just be kind to yourselves, you know, not nice, but kindness, that loving kindness of, you know, really remembering the first eye, the heart. And that's what we are. We're love in a body, divine in the flesh. And that, so it really extend that tenderness firstly to yourselves, kids.
Beautiful. Thanks much, Maria.
Yeah.
Thanks, audience, for listening. And Leslie,
yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah, I've loved, you know, this conversation, Maria. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Honored, and it's a pleasure to share this conversation with you. Yeah.
Big love to you both.
All right. Evil is the destruction of freedom. See you guys next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.